Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Always so happy to be back here on a Monday, get back to doing what we love. But I got to say, this Monday's not like every other Monday because it was sad to leave all the EWTN people and all the EWTN affiliates at the big national radio conference. Extraordinary people. And now I'm going to know more about where the calls are coming from, too, because I met a bunch of new people from networks I hadn't met before. And wherever the calls are coming from, I'll be like, oh, I know those people. So we had just
kind of a networking event.
It was a networking event. That's what it was. Oh, it was networking with the network. Yes, Joe. Was that a pun or just a play on words? Because you bother me with your
all. Let the record show the pedantry between pun and wordplay. That is a Chris Check thing.
That's not you. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. This hour. Why aren't you Catholic? That's what we're doing. Why aren't you Catholic? You're welcome to call and let us know why you're not Catholic. Maybe there's a particular incident you'd like to tell us about. Maybe you're like, I never thought of being Catholic, and it never even occurred to me. And why would I be Catholic? If you call up and say that, that's fun. We'll have a good conversation. Maybe you don't believe in God. Maybe Jesus. You don't believe in Jesus, or don't believe that he's the Son of God, the Messiah. The Lord come among us. Or maybe you're a sola scriptura Christian and you don't feel that you have a need for the Catholic Church. Is there any other categories, Joe, that I'm leaving out? Probably like about a billion. 888-318-7884. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say any number of the non-Christian religions. You could be like, you're a devout Hindu,
yeah,
Muslim, whatever, fill in the blank.
That's right. Yeah. Is that your total knowledge of world religions, Hindu and Muslim? You got nothing else, Joe?
I taught world religions, and those are the two I remember. I think there might be other ones.
That's not true. No. I know, but of course. But there's always the debate with like Buddhism, for example. Well, is it a religion though? And even Buddhism.
This is one of the things I covered in my class. And I've got a CASA, Catholic Answers School of Apologetics course on world religions, and that's one of the things we have to address early on is what even is a religion? Because if you just mean a system of belief, well, is democracy a religion? Is capitalism a religion? Is communism a religion? You know, like, or if it's going to be something about God, well, is Buddhism a religion? Is Confucianism a religion? Is Taoism a religion? And so it gets very murky. There's some things that clearly are religions, the Abrahamic religions. And then there are some things that are a little murkier.
Well, what you give the example of the Abrahamic religions, those are clearly religions, but wouldn't most of the polytheistic religions be like made sacrifice in temples and did all that stuff? Those are pretty clearly religions.
Yes. Yeah. Huh. So from a Western context, you know, there's two very large kind of branches of religion. You've got Western and Eastern religions. And there's a handful of religions that are a little more in the middle, like Baha'i. Yeah, the Western religions, when we talk about what we mean by religion, particularly in the West, we have in mind the Abrahamic religions and the polytheistic alternatives to them. Yeah. But when you go into India or China, the situation gets a lot more complicated.
Right.
Or, you know, basically anywhere in Eastern or Southeastern Asia as well.
888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We actually did a focus episode on this, and Joe taught a class on it, and you can get that over at Catholic Answers School of Apologetics. Just go to schoolofapologetics.com if you want to know more about that, or catholic.com. Today, we're just talking with non-Catholics, and if you're not a Catholic and you'd like to tell us why you are not a Catholic, would love to talk with you. 888-318-7884. And this is the part often I will say, and feel comfortable to call because our guest is a convert to the Catholic faith. But it's not true with Joe and it's not true with me. This is like we're like the unusual pair here at Catholic Answers. Two people put together and not one of us a convert to the Catholic faith. Both of us original OG Catholics. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Let me see. No, we're not quite ready for the phones. We're going to the phones in a second. Let me see how many people have called. I'll tell you what. Look, there's only two lines open. So if you're not a Catholic, one line open now. If you're not a Catholic and you've been like, I want to call some Catholics up and tell them why I'm not Catholic. You only got one line open. 888-318-7884. Joe. You taught the class on world religions. Did you teach any other School of Apologetics classes? Or have you done it yet?
Yeah, I've got one that I just did on St. Peter, and I may have some other ones in the future, but I've only kind of dipped a toe into that. When I said I taught a class in that, I actually meant I literally taught as a college professor, like an adjunct college professor, that class originally, and then I did a modified version of it for Catholic Answers School of Apologetics. I was invited to do that when I first came on, and I thought, hey, here's an entire area that I've recently taught and will probably forget, so I better do it now, or I'm going to have to do a lot more research next time if I wait a few years. I had all my notes and everything.
Yeah,
so it was absolutely opportunism. It was not just that I feel so passionate about comparative religion or anything like that.
888-318-7884. Now we can go to the phones. Ethan in Temple, Texas, listening on 106.8 FM. We're glad you're here, Ethan. First caller of the week. Why aren't you Catholic?
Well, I actually am Catholic, and I was raised Catholic, and I went to a Catholic school and the whole nine yards. But probably around age 10, my family stopped going to church, or my father and my mother stopped going to church, so I stopped going. And I recently got married, and she convinced me to start going back to church. But for the past, 6 months or so, I've been going to a non-denominational church, and I'm happy there. We like it, but I still listen to y'all's radio, and I'm still Catholic. So, my question is if I'm pretty happy where I'm at, but I still, technically am Catholic. Is there any reasoning why I should go back, start going back to a Catholic church?
Brother,
Joe Heschmeyer. Yeah,
okay. I am so glad you asked that. I'm glad you're just wondering that, because I think there's actually a lot of people who wonder some version of that question. And I want to make it really clear. I'm really glad that you're getting some kind of spiritual nourishment at your non-denominational church. I'm not about to just tear down all the good that's probably going on there. What I want to offer is more, that we're made for relationship with Jesus Christ and the intimacy of that relationship. The early Christians talk about it like this. Gregory of Nyssa, I just gave a talk at the Catholic Answers Conference on this. Gregory of Nyssa, one of the early Christians, talks about how your body and soul, and so your access to Jesus at the level of the soul is through faith. But there's a way in which Jesus gives himself to us in a bodily way, which is in the Eucharist. And so the best reason to go back to Mass, I would say, is twofold. Number one, a sort of because he said so sort of approach. And Jesus founded the Catholic Church. The idea of non-denominationalism is a good one. It's a recognition that all these Protestant denominations aren't of God. God didn't found however many Protestant denominations there are out there. You go back and trace the history of the Baptists, the Methodists, the Presbyterians, the Anglicans, and so on. And it's not going back to the first century. It's not going back to Jesus Christ. You trace the history of the Catholic Church. It is going back to Jesus Christ. So he founds this church. He calls for us to be part of it in John 17. He wishes that all Christians will remain one even in the future. He explicitly prays not only for the believers of his day, but for those who will come to believe in the witness of the apostles, meaning us. He prays for us all to be one. And so the way we obey that is by being in the one church he founds. That's one reason. But the other reason, like I kind of hinted at before, is the Eucharist, that Jesus gives himself to us, body, blood, soul, and divinity, in the Eucharist, and that this is a kind of communion with God that Protestant denominations don't have access to, but that I think if they knew about, every Christian of all stripes would want this, right? If you want relationship with Jesus Christ, and they're right to want that, they're right to have that in so many ways, this is a unique way of kind of accessing that. So in comparison to that, what you're getting at a Protestant worship service is much closer to a Catholic Bible study. You're coming together. You might be reading the Bible. You might be hearing someone explain the Bible really well. You might be praying together, but you're not engaging in the true worship of God that happens in the Mass. And so when you look back at how did the early Christians worship God? They offered the sacrifice of the Mass, and they say just as much. You go back to the first century, the Didache talks about this. They offer the true sacrifice. That this is something super early on. We find the early Christians saying this is how we worship God, because he commands it and because this is this unique avenue of intimacy with God. And so that's what's on offer, brother. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but I want to kind of lay that out and see what you think of that, Ethan.
That was beautifully put. Yeah, I really have nothing to say. That was put perfectly, and I'm really glad that I called. I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
Well, Ethan, I'll tell you what.
I mean, that was perfect.
I'd like to send you a little book that we have called The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness and Where to Find It, which is about many of the things that Joe was just talking about. If you would like a copy of that book, just stay on the line, and we'll be happy to send it to you. And it does sound like you're open to considering coming back to Mass.
Yeah, that's one thing my parents always say is, you know, they're actually not extreme. They're happy that I'm going to church, but they're not happy that I'm not going to a Catholic church. And they always tell me, why are you going to that church? Catholic church was the first church. You know, that's one point they always try to make to me.
Well, yeah, and it's also about heavenly food, as Joe was talking about. So, please stay in touch. Call again if you have more questions, all right? And
We'd love to keep this conversation going as you kind of go on your journey, Ethan.
Okay, Ethan?
Absolutely. Thank you all so much. Y'all have a good one.
You too. Hang on for your free book.
God bless you.
If you'd like to give us an address, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884 is the number. We have to take a quick break. But lots of non-Catholics lined up to tell us why they are not Catholic. Looking forward to some wonderful conversations. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest, and we'll be right back after this.
Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Wherever you are in the world, you can access the EWTN Global Catholic Network. It's everywhere. You can get EWTN's great Catholic programming on your car radio, at home on your TV, computer, or smart speaker. With EWTN's app, you can take EWTN everywhere on your phone or mobile device. If you want your news in print, turn to EWTN's paper of record, the National Catholic Register. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why aren't you Catholic today? Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. First hour, second hour, Jimmy Akin will be here, ready to have lots of fun having these conversations. Just want to let you know this first, though. Reader Josh had this to say about Joe Heschmeyer's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. This book is a great resource for anyone wanting to learn more or defend the roots of their Catholic faith. Joe does a great job putting this rich topic into layman's terms. Highly suggest. Want to pick up a copy of Joe's book for yourself or for a friend or for an enemy? Great news. It's on sale. That wasn't in the script. I added that. On sale along with hundreds of other items as part of the fall store-wide sale at shop.catholic.com. Check out all the deals today. Store-wide sale at shop.catholic.com. But Jesus said, love your enemies.
Yeah,
so
true.
Give them a copy of a great book.
I'd like to see a promotion where you just do spite gifts. Send this to the person who
hates the
Catholic Church.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Montana. Oh, yes, I'd love to go to Montana. Mitchell in Montana, listening on 97.5 FM. Welcome, Mitchell. Why aren't you Catholic?
Hi, if my phone dies, I'm like 1%, so if I don't answer, that's why. But I grew up in Pennsylvania, and as I grew older, I had a lot of friends from different areas. Two were from China, one was Muslim, another one was Jewish, and I realized, now, why am I Methodist, and they are Jewish or Muslim? And to me, I think the reason is because I didn't grow up in a Jewish community or a Muslim community. If I'm in New York City right now listening to a radio station called Why Aren't You Jewish? Or somewhere else, Why Aren't You Muslim? I feel like all those would be the same reason, mainly because I didn't grow up with that faith.
All right, let Joe address that, and then we'll come back and check in on
it. I like the honesty and the candor of that, and I think this is something that is worth kind of meditating on. And it doesn't mean it's wrong, right? Like, being born into a religion, being born into a way of thinking, that doesn't automatically mean it's wrong, but it doesn't automatically mean it's right either. There's an important part of growing up where you say, is what I was taught true? You know, is what I received from my parents true? And I'm glad that you are seemingly open to that question or asking that question. And so if I were to make the pitch for the Catholic Church, it wouldn't just be, you know, as you heard maybe at the top of the hour, both Sai and I grew up Catholic. Now, I didn't grow up really understanding what the Catholic Church believed. So I was totally ready, even by the age of about 12, to jump ship until I really learned a lot more about why Catholics believe what they believe. So I feel you on that. I think, you know, I grew up this way isn't really enough of an explanation or enough of an answer, but it's really an honest answer at the same time. To that, I would suggest this, because like, you mentioned all these non-Christian alternatives as well, that the way I kind of describe it is other world religions are about men reaching out to God. Judaism is an exception from this, but as a general rule, other world religions and other philosophies, you know, Buddhism and the like, are about this quest to find God. There is a natural desire to see God and to know God. And what makes Judaism and Christianity unique, what makes it different, is that it's God's reaching out to man. It's God revealing himself to man rather than, you know, some brilliant thinker or sage saying, here's what I think about God, about the universe, about the world. Does that distinction make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so that's just like Christianity versus non-Christianity. But within the kind of at least Catholic-Protestant discussion, there's a similar sort of thing. That Protestantism is man reaching out to Christ. It's man trying to follow Christ to the best of his own ability, certainly aided by grace. I don't think any Protestant would deny that. But there's still this attempt on the end of man to just say, what do I think Christ taught? And there's a sense that I have to like make my own church, my own denomination, or have to follow another man-made denomination. And the Catholic answer to that is no, like, Christ comes to us. He makes the church. We don't make it for him. Just as God reveals himself to us, we don't reveal God to ourselves. Just as there's that difference between non-Christian religions, man reaching out to God, you have a similar thing at the level of the church with Protestants kind of having a man-made denomination that's just as apart as having a man-made religion is, where there may be some true things there, but the way God does it is he does the revealing, he does the building, he builds the church. And I think you can see this even, you know, you mentioned being Methodist. You can trace this even in the history of Methodist thought. So John Wesley, who I really have a great deal of respect for, he has a 1749 letter to a Roman Catholic in which he talks about all the things that he and Catholics have in common. He came from an Anglican background. And one of the things he talks about is that Methodists and Catholics both believe that Christ was born of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who, in his words, as well after as before she brought him forth, continued a pure and unspotted virgin. That is, John Wesley took it for granted that Catholics and Methodists could agree on the perpetual virginity of Mary. And I think it's safe to say that virtually no Methodist today agrees with that. That Methodists have strayed from even, not just historic Christianity, even historic Methodism. And the check against that, the way we don't fall into that, is by saying, what has Christ revealed to us? And the way we know that is, what has he revealed through the church, rather than just like, as individual followers, what do I think the message is? Does that distinction make sense? And is that maybe a helpful way of thinking about the question?
Yeah, and one of the biggest things I struggle with, and that might be a separate topic from today, is just in my view, if I don't believe the correct denomination or the correct faith, I'm lost. And to me, if I grew up in a certain family that never believed that, then I'm just I just like messed up. But like, I didn't mess up, but there's no I'm out of luck, you know. Like, unless I completely switch to the right one, maybe that's Catholic, maybe it's something else. But unless I switch to the right one, I'm just out of luck. You know,
so
you see how I'm...
Oh, yeah, no, I totally get where you're coming from.
Different things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So to that, I would say this. Like, for one, how you raise your child really does matter. I don't want to act like it doesn't matter. So you can prepare a kid to have a proper view of God, a proper view of the world, a proper view of right and wrong conduct. Or you can prepare a child to have a wrong view of all those things, and you can really mess them up for life. That's just one of the reasons parents are really important. But no one is a slave to their family of origin. There are all sorts of people who convert. A Pew Research study found that a majority of Protestants, convert at some point in their life within the kind of world of Christianity. That if you grew up Methodist, the odds of you dying Methodist are a little under 50%. So it's not just like, well, if you grew up in this one way, you have no other possibility of getting to another worldview because you have free will. You can still say, no, I hear another vision of reality that makes more sense. I see another Christian denomination that has a more coherent claim or whatever it is, right? Like people convert for all sorts of reasons. But then the third thing is, in terms of God's judgment, God judges you on what you say yes and no to, not on what you didn't know and had no way of knowing. So this is pretty clearly taught in Luke 12:48, in which Jesus says, everyone to whom much is given, of him much will be required. And of him to whom men commit much, they will demand the more. In other words, you're judged based on what you do with the gifts God gave you. And those gifts include your natural talents. They also include the upbringing you got. They include like your access to divine revelation. They include all of those things. And so the people who live in ignorance aren't judged on the things that they're in ignorance of. They're judged on how they responded to God's call on them in whatever way he did call them. So you see this really clearly in Acts 17. St. Paul goes to Mars Hill, and he's talking to a group of pagans who have a temple to an unknown God. And he tells them that he's there to proclaim that unknown God. And he tells them that, you know, God is merciful to them from that time of ignorance when they were seeking after him and didn't know where to find him. But now he's come. Like, he's the fulfillment of that longing of the human heart. And so Paul is there to reveal this previously unknown God. So that's an important difference. Like, had they not heard Paul's message, they wouldn't have been judged for having not known about Christianity. They had no control over that. Once they hear about Christianity, this is the fulfillment of everything they've been longing for. And it also creates this responsibility. Now, what are you going to do about it? So the gospel is an invitation. It is a gift, and it's also a challenge. So in that sense, I wouldn't worry about people who had, you know, through no fault of their own, didn't have access to the gospel, except to say, bring them the gospel. Does that make sense? Does that help?
Hang on a second, Mitchell. Just a quick sec. I had you on hold. Go ahead, Mitchell. Does that make sense? That was kind of what I feared. We've lost Mitchell. But Mitchell, thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it. We'd be happy to send you Words of Eternal Life if you'd like. But hang on, and if Edgar can get your address, then we'll send it to you. But I'm going to go to Jaime now in Houston, Texas, listening on 1430 AM. Jaime, you there with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, welcome. Why aren't you Catholic?
I have two questions.
Jaime, you got to speak right into the phone. It's really hard to hear you.
Can you hear me? Is this better?
Much better. Yeah, go ahead.
Much better.
All right, I'm sorry about that. I really want to tell you I appreciate that answer. Like, because that was one of my questions, is how come there's so many different religions, and what about the people in, say, India or Indonesia or wherever, mm-hmm. and they don't hear about Christianity? And then, you know, you just even went to scriptures and answered that for me. It's like, you know, they won't be judged on it, but other than how they did with it. But my question is, why is there so many, like, what do we use the saints for? Because in my head, you know, if I was Catholic, wouldn't we be praying directly to God? And also, I was dating this girl one time, and she was part of this group called the Neo Catechumenate Way.
Yeah.
And they would say things like, oh, if you kiss the priest's hands, it'll forgive you one sin. In my head, so I was just like, and I'm not going to kiss the hand of another man. I mean, if it was like God or something like that, that would be different. But I'm not sure I fully believe in all those little other details, if that makes sense. So I was trying to get some clarification on both of those.
Okay.
Those are kind of things that within the Catholic Church that will keep me away.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad you asked that. And that neo-catechumenal idea, you know, I got to tell you, it's the first I've heard anyone make that particular claim. So I'm as skeptical as you are that kissing the priest's hands means that your sins are forgiven. Now, it is an appropriate sign of respect because the priest is bringing God to us. But the priest isn't God. And so he stands in the person of Christ. He stands what we sometimes call an altar Christus. Like when Jesus says, do this in remembrance of me with the Eucharist, and the priest says, this is my body, this is my blood. He's not saying, this is my body, you know, Father Smith. He's saying, this is Jesus Christ's body. So he's able to speak and act in the person of Christ. And so he has this very special kind of role that he plays. And so we honor Christ in the priest. We also honor Christ in the poor, right? Like, so in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus, when he's separating the sheep and the goats, says, whatever you do to the least of my brethren, you do to me. And so there's this sense in which we honor or venerate the poor. We honor and venerate the sick, the wounded, because we recognize in a special way in the brokenness of humanity, the presence of Christ. So in that, we're not worshiping any of those people, which is going to lead directly into what I'm going to say about the saints. But I hear the music, so I'm going to, if you would, just hold that thought, and we will cover that on the other side of the break.
Jaime, we'd appreciate it if you could hang on for just a few seconds, and we'll be right back with more. Why Aren't You Catholic? On Catholic Answers Live with Joe Heschmeyer.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Jaime on the line from Houston, Texas, listening on 1430 AM. The question to Jaime and to you, if you want to call, why aren't you Catholic? 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. So what is all of this about praying to the saints, Joe?
Yeah, so where we kind of left off was this idea that when we honor Christ and the priest or honor Christ and the poor, we're not treating them as God. We are recognizing Christ's presence within them. And so we're honoring him through them. When we talk about the saints, it's a similar thing. So, Jaime's question was, well, praying to Mary or praying to the saints. A lot depends on what we mean by praying, because Catholics, we mean requesting, asking for things. Protestants often use prayer to mean worship, which isn't actually what the word prayer means, strictly speaking. Prayer is a request. Pray tell. Pray for relief from the court. Pray is requesting something. And so when we say, like, we pray to Mary, we mean, like, we ask Mary or we ask the saints for something. What do we ask them for? Well, we ask them for their prayers. We ask them to make requests to God on our behalf. Now, that's not in replacement of going directly to God. That's in addition to going directly to God. Just as if I ask Cy Kellett for prayers, I'm also going to go directly to God. And so there's, I think it's really important to recognize that this isn't idolatry. This is literally the opposite of idolatry. Here's what I mean by that. Idolatry is the idea that God is not enough. If you look at the Old Testament, it was not usually that the Israelites stopped believing in the God of Israel. They just stopped believing the God of Israel was enough. They needed another God as well, or they needed other gods as well as God. And we do the same thing all the time, but not with the saints. We do the same thing with things like money. You know, I need God and a good retirement. I need God and a good job. I need God and a safety net. I need God and fill in the blank. Whatever that God plus, the other side of that plus is the idol. That's the idea of idolatry. And that's why, for instance, in Colossians 3, St. Paul refers to covetousness as idolatry. Because whatever you're coveting is the thing you've convinced yourself you need in addition to God. That's like, he's not exaggerating when he says covetousness is idolatry. He's just, he understands what idolatry is. Idolatry is not about, oh, you said a prayer in front of a statue. No, it's, I didn't believe God was enough. That's what idolatry is. So when we go to the saints, we go to them because we believe God is enough and we want them to go to God. We're not saying, do this because God can't do it for me. We're saying, go to God and ask that he'll do this. We don't think they have some power apart from God. We don't think they have some authority apart from God. That everything they do, whether it's asking for God, whether it's interceding on our behalf, whatever that is, all of that is only coming from God and through God because God is all-powerful. So that's what I mean when I say it's the opposite of idolatry. Just like when I ask a brother Christian or a sister Christian to pray for me, that's not me not believing in God. It's not me not believing in the power of prayer. It's the opposite of that. It's believing that the prayers of the righteous man are efficacious, as we're told in the New Testament. I don't know. Does that help you, Jaime?
Yeah, that helps me. And I mean, you're kind of touching on the aspect of prayer. And, you know, that's where I kind of get confused as well, because it's, if God's will is going to constantly be done in our lives, why would I need to pray for you know, success, or pray for things to go well the next day, or things like that?
I'm glad you asked, because God's a father and he doesn't want robots. He wants sons and daughters. And I don't know if you have any kids. I do. And I regularly give them conditionals. I'll say things like, if you eat 3 more bites of your food, you can have dessert. And it's like a 50-50 if they're going to do it. And if they do it, then my will is to give them the dessert. If they don't do it, they're not going to get the dessert. There's a conditionality to my will. Does that make sense? So likewise with God, there are some things he will give you if you ask for them, because he's told you to pray. And there's some things you're not going to get because you didn't ask for them. So prayer is part of the will of God. So in other words, we think of God's will as something external that we're only going to interfere with. But God's will is actually internal as well, that he wills for us to act and to be part of his will, and that we cooperate with his will and actually can bring things about through our prayers. That's why scripture says the prayers of a righteous man are efficacious. You know, you look at Elijah, he prays and he brings about a drought for 3 years. He prays again and he ends the drought. Prayer really does something. It doesn't just change our minds. It doesn't just change our hearts. It changes the world around us as well. And that's because God's plan for us is to make us sons and daughters after his own likeness.
Jaime, I'm going to leave it there, but I'm wondering if maybe you would like a book that we have called Why We're Catholic, because you have a lot of questions and it's kind of a question and answer book. If you would like it, hang on the line and we'll send it to you. If not, we won't take any offense. Well, we'll take a little bit of offense, but we won't tell you that it offended us. But you're welcome to it. Just hang on, Jaime, and I hope we hear from you again. We do have lots of folks on the line. One line open right now, if you are not a Catholic and you want to tell us why you are not Catholic, 888-318-7884. Now we go to Cleveland, Ohio, listening on The Rock. Don in Cleveland, go ahead with your question. Or no, I shouldn't say it that way. I should say, Don, welcome. Why aren't you Catholic?
Hello, Joe. Is this Joe?
Hi. It is Joe and Cy, but don't worry about him.
Hello. I've enjoyed your show, and I was saying I was baptized, and then I was told I was a Christian, and I was told that I was going to go to heaven, but it seems like with the Catholics, there's more requirements to keep the gates of heaven open. But you kind of answered
question. That
when you were saying about Luke. In the Bible, that God judges you by what you say yes or no to, and not the things you don't know.
Yeah, that's a very important part of that answer. I'm glad. Look, we got people answering their own questions. I'll just see myself out. This is great, Don. No, in all seriousness, I think this is a really good question, because a lot of times you'll find Protestant denominations that preach what they call the assurance of salvation or perseverance of the saints, or something's called once saved, always saved. There's maybe some little variations in that. But the danger with that, it sounds really appealing, right? It sounds like, oh, good, I just checked this box. I believe in Jesus. I don't have to sweat it. It's not biblical. And that should be a warning to us. So 2 Timothy, St. Paul warns us in chapter 4, verses 3-4, that the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but having itching ears, they'll accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own likings and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander into myths. In other words, we always want an easier version of Christianity. And there's not an easier version of Christianity than perseverance of the saints, than once saved, always saved, because you literally can't lose your salvation. Now, listen instead to what St. Paul says in Philippians. He says, therefore, my beloved, as you've always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For God is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. So the will of God, as I just said to Jaime, I think it was in the last call, that it's not just something external, it's also something internal. God is at work in us, but we need to also be working out our own salvation, not as something we do apart from God, but it's something we do in this relationship with God that's only possible through the grace of God. So we have numerous examples in Scripture of people who at one point believe but then fall away. I mean, look at the apostles. You got Judas, right? Also go to Acts 8. You got Philip, right? Philip the magician. He believes and is baptized. We're told that explicitly. And then after that, he then tries to buy the gift of confirmation. He tries to buy the spiritual power of the laying on of hands. And St. Peter rebukes him and says, your silver perished with you because you thought you could obtain the gift of God with money. You have neither part nor lot in this matter, for your heart is not right before God. Repent, therefore, of this wickedness of yours and pray to the Lord that, if possible, the intent of your heart may be forgiven you. And Simon responds and asks for prayers. So we see here's someone who believes and is baptized. So that's the formula for being saved. You know, Mark 16, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. But then he loses his salvation by turning away from God and trying to achieve these spiritual gifts all on his own. And Peter rebukes him and says, you know, we'll turn back to God and you may be saved. He doesn't take it for granted. He doesn't say, oh, well, you believed and were baptized, so you're good. Don't worry about it. He says that he's not in right relationship with God. He's no longer part of them. And so then Simon asks for prayers. And the story is kind of left there. We don't know what happens with Simon. But one thing we should clearly take away from that is that once saved, always saved isn't true. The last example I'd give you is from 2 Peter chapter 2. That entire chapter is about those who St. Peter, again, says have been ransomed by Christ, but then reject the one who ransomed them. And he says that they are worse off now than they were before because they've turned back into slavery. And he compares them to dogs that go back to their vomit and a pig that's washed only to wallow in the mire. So they've been baptized. They've been ransomed by Christ, and then they turn back. So all that's to say, I see why it's appealing to believe in perseverance of salvation. I get why, you know, our itching ears want to believe that. But I also know from Scripture that's just not true. Like, it just isn't true that we can't lose our salvation. It's just not true we can just sit on our hindquarters and be okay. We're called to cooperate and work out our salvation with fear and trembling. Does that help, Don?
Yes. That was very, very informative. I appreciate that. Okay. And thank you very much. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Thank you, Don.
Well, Don, we'll send you a free book, too, if you want it.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye, Don.
Bye. God bless.
I feel like I'm going to kind of miss her. She was very cheerful.
I like Don.
I know. I kind of like Don.
Bright, sparkling, I mean, Don.
I'm not offended that she didn't take the book. It's just another free book for me, but... all right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. More. Why aren't you Catholic? If you're not a Catholic, I should tell you this before we go to the break. There's 3 lines open right now out of a total of 6. So you can give it a try. We'd love to have you. Why aren't you Catholic? 888-318-7884.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, why don't you air these people? And I said, no, because I don't think they're Catholic. He says, by what right do you have to say that? I said, I own the network.
Mother Angelica Live Classics. Tomorrow night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Television and Radio.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're having a good time. I hope that our callers are having a good time. We want people to feel welcome here. We don't want to feel people to feel all. So we certainly don't want people to feel assaulted or anything. But there's lots of non-Catholic people who would love to tell us why they're not Catholic. We, of course, are Catholic, and we're actually working right now at this very moment trying to make it possible for every single person alive on Earth to come willingly into the Catholic Church. So, I mean, we're not hiding our agenda or anything. The show is called Catholic Answers. But if you're not Catholic, we love these opportunities to have these conversations. Maybe you don't believe in God. Maybe you don't believe in Jesus. Maybe it's the church that you don't accept. Or maybe there's some other reason why you're not Catholic. If you'd like to share it with us, 888-318-7884. Going to Yoakum now in Toronto, Canada, watching on YouTube. Yoakum, welcome. Why aren't you Catholic?
Hi, Joe. Hi, Kai. Thanks for taking my call.
Can I ask you a quick question? Is he pronouncing your name correctly?
Yeah, Yoakum is fine. It's fine.
Wait. Okay, so Kai is fine too then. All right, if we're playing the okay, that's fine game. Go ahead, Yoakum.
It's
I'm just playing with you.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, I apologize. So I'm Orthodox.
Yeah.
And and I want to say this in a spirit of brotherhood, because you know there's so much that the Orthodox and the Catholic, share. And it's such a grievous wound in the body that there's, that there exists this division. But I would say that one of the reasons why I am not Catholic there are a couple, but the big one for me is the papacy. And in particular, it is the papacy, as expressed in Pastor Eternus, at the council, at the Vatican Council, the first Vatican Council, and I think at that point, it just begs the. I mean, from my perspective, looking at this, why is it necessary to sort of lay out, many of the claims? Some of them, some of them are reasonable. Some of them are. I think, just have no historicity to them. I'll give you an example. I think infallible authority, I think, is one. Universal jurisdiction. I would say St. Paul of Blessed Memory, St. Peter of Blessed Memory, both had some form of universal jurisdiction. I would also see Antioch as a Petrine see. So, sorry, I'm going to land my plane. But these are so when I look at the first millennium church, I simply don't see the Catholic Church of today, and those would be my reasons for not being Catholic.
Well, let me begin by saying I think that it's the single best reason to be Orthodox and not Catholic, if you reject the papacy. I mean, there's plenty of things, if you prefer leavened bread over unleavened bread in the Eucharist or something like that, or you have thoughts about whether the filioque should have been added to the creed or not. In my mind, those are not the kind of issues that should decide if one is Catholic or Orthodox. It's this question of what's the authority structure set up by Christ? Did he set up a structure whereby one bishop or one apostle had a particular authority amongst the others? Or did he set it up with 12 co-equal heads? And so I think you're absolutely right. I think you're asking the right question, in other words. However, I obviously disagree with kind of where you come out on that question. So I appreciate you honing in on the right issue. I appreciate all the common ground that you rightly say that we have. On the question of whether the Catholics or whether the Christians in the first millennium were Catholic or not, I would point to a few different areas. But before I do that, if I may, I assume that you would look to like the ecumenical councils for authority. Is that a fair assumption?
Oh,
sorry, you might have been muted there.
No. Yes, I absolutely would see the ecumenical councils as being infallible.
And how many ecumenical councils do you think there are?
Well okay, I was going to ask you that question because it depends on what you mean by ecumenical council. I'd say there's 7 ecumenical councils that I would hold to as Orthodox. I know you have more counsel that you would consider.
Right. What I would actually say on the Orthodox side is there's actually not that much agreement about there being 7 and only 7. In the U.S., there is. But Bishop Callistus Ware, of happy memory, described the problem this way. He said, how then can one be certain that a particular gathering is truly an ecumenical council and therefore that its decrees are infallible? Many councils have considered themselves ecumenical and have claimed to speak in the name of the whole church, and yet the church has rejected them as heretical. He mentioned Second Ephesus, the so-called Robert Council, the Iconoclast Council of Hereria in 758, and in Florence in 1438 to 39, where the Orthodox actually agreed the Pope is the head of the church and then later went back and rejected that. And so there are at least 3 cases of councils that appear to be valid ecumenical councils that Callistus Ware points out. That how do we account from an Orthodox ecclesiology why they're not ecumenical councils? And Ware goes on and says precisely what it is that makes a council ecumenical is not so clear. And so we know that there are some Orthodox who accept the Council of Trullo. We know there are some who believe there's an 8th ecumenical council, 4th Constantinople, 879. Some even have a 9th ecumenical council, so-called 5th. Constantinople. There was the attempt at an ecumenical council in 2016, the so-called Great Council. So what makes those 7 the valid ecumenical councils of the first millennium? And the best answer to that is the acceptance by the Bishop of Rome, by the Pope, that without him, you don't have any principle in which to say these 7 and only these 7 councils are considered ecumenical. Because in the early church, prior to the Great Schism, there are 7 that are accepted by the Pope, and Orthodox still hold to those 7 and only those 7. The most glaring example of this is the so-called Robert Council, the Second Council of Ephesus. Now, this is in 449, so it's between the Third Council, Ephesus, and the Fourth Council, Chalcedon, and it's heretical. And yet it appears to be a valid ecumenical council, but the Pope's legate, Hilarius, just says contradictor. He just says, like, I contradict this. And he flees and goes back. And the Pope, Pope Leo, says it's a robber council. And by his singular authority, rejects this entire body that was putatively an ecumenical council. It makes it very clear that an ecumenical council is not above a pope. It makes it very clear that an ecumenical council's authority requires papal approval. And this decree by Pope Leo was accepted both in the West and in the East. And so after this, and you have, you know, just a few years later, 2 years later, Chalcedon, in which Leo is declared Peter, that Peter speaks through Leo. And they affirm Chalcedonian Orthodoxy. So I don't know a way to affirm that from an Orthodox perspective, because clearly both Orthodox and Catholics are going to say the conclusion was the right one. Second Ephesus is wrong. Chalcedon is correct. But the only way to get to that conclusion that I see from history is by the Pope's authority, even over an ecumenical council. What would you say to that, Joachim, or Joachim, or however you pronounce it?
Yeah, I mean, Joachim is probably the better way to do it.
Okay.
So, Joachim. So what I would say is, I would agree that there certainly was some, you know, especially at Chalcedon, the description of the Pope, the Roman Pontiff, in very exalted terms, and that there was certainly some authority there. I think that when you get to Pastor Eternus, though, it changes qualitatively, right? So I think what happens then
is where it's still collegial, whilst there is a primacy, which I don't think any right-minded Orthodox should or could deny.
If I may jump in, I know you'll grant primacy, but would you grant that the Pope has the ability to determine what is and isn't an ecumenical council?
Well, amongst other things, you would also say that the Church has to fully receive this council as ecumenical for it to be ecumenical, right? You'd have to also agree that that's necessary.
What would that look like? So, I mean, take even Chalcedon or Chalcedon. There's non-Chalcedonian Christians, right? There are people who break off from the Church because they reject the council. So how do we know whether the council or the schismatics are in the wrong there? So I think going by the reception in the Church is very difficult because it's a very amorphous kind of standard. Because which Christians are we counting?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I'm just not sure. I think it's a combination. So what I'm trying to get at is I'm agreeing with the idea of primacy. I'm just pushing back at the idea of mm-hmm. of supremacy as you seem to want to sort of define, right? So this idea is I think an evolution of that primacy, and I would say that the first millennium. Now, I'm not saying that, in all fairness, I'm not saying that Orthodox ecclesiology, I'm going to be probably castigated for saying this, but is absolutely spot on. I mean, we've got issues of our own, serious issues. But I'm not sure that the solution or what happens at Vatican I, I don't think it's a solution. I think you see this as literally led by the Holy Spirit. Is actually what the first millennium church looks like. And I think the reason I'm saying that is because why would it be necessary to declare something like this at Vatican I, so many, millennium.
That's a very good question. Because it was so hotly disputed. I mean, clearly it's not the first, it isn't like the 1800s is the first time you see the Pope playing this major role or being treated as infallible. You go back to St. Irenaeus in 180. You know, that's 10% of the way to 1800. And he says it is a matter of necessity that every church should agree with this church, meaning the Roman Church, on account of its preeminent authority. That's everything that you just talked about. That's supremacy and authority. That's the need to agree with it in matters of faith and morals, right? So that includes within it the idea that obviously that church cannot be in error, or else he'd be saying you have to agree on error. So there is implicitly, even there, some hint of something like papal infallibility. But you're right that, like, this role of the Pope should never be exercised in isolation from collegiality. And Vatican I doesn't mean to deny that. Vatican II is even more explicit on that. Now, the important historical detail, Vatican I is interrupted by the Franco-Prussian War. And so you have what's kind of a half of a council. And so it did produce, I think you're right in saying, kind of a lopsided ecclesiology that focuses on the role of the Pope and not understanding the other half of that coin, which is the role of the College of Bishops. Vatican II takes up the mantle there, especially in Lumen Gentium, and finishes the thought. So in paragraph 27 of Lumen Gentium, it says bishops are vicars and ambassadors of Christ. They're vicars of Christ as well as the Pope is. And it makes clear explicitly they're not to be regarded as vicars of the Roman pontiffs. In other words, the bishops are not just the middle management between the Pope and your local parish. And too often, even Catholics have fallen into this kind of lopsided ecclesiology. But that's not the teaching of the Catholic Church and never has been. Now, in practice, there may be popes who overstep their authority. That's not new to the second millennium. We see that in the first millennium. You go back to Pope Victor, again, in like 180, 190, and you see him excommunicating all the churches in Asia Minor. That was an abuse of his legitimate authority. And Pope Irenaeus, the same pope who talked about the necessity of agreeing with the Pope, the same bishop who talked about the necessity of agreeing with the Pope, kind of talks Victor down from misusing his authority in that way. So I'd say the abuses you highlight are real, but they're ones we see in the first millennium, in the second century, as well as in modern times.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, as you can hear. But thank you very, very much for the call. What a great conversation about Catholicism and Orthodoxy. But lots more great conversations to come. Go ahead and call now, and we'll have Jimmy Akin here with us. We'll continue with Why Aren't You Catholic? 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. If you're not a Catholic, all those lines are being held for you. Joe Heschmeyer, thank you. It's always great to do an hour with you. Almost as good as, about half as good as doing 2 hours.
Thanks.
All right. See you next time, Joe. We'll take a very quick break. Right back with more Why Aren't You Catholic on Catholic Answers Live.